To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, 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 and a time for every purpose under heaven. Quite an emotional week, an insurgence of strong feelings that have at points felt, quite frankly, overwhelming and unsettling. But because of this, I know they are important, and if I sit with them and process, I'm pretty sure it will lead to more self-knowledge and peace in my life. It's my unconventional life with the birds. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is My Unconventional Life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? So, yeah, some week, I started feeling this upswing of emotions that really I could only describe as jealousy and a fear of loss about Eri. We signed our parenting partnership agreement contract last week, and I think the reality of having a child with someone really took hold, even if just subliminally. Because I just started getting these intense feelings of jealousy and anxiety. She went for a coffee with a guy friend, and as much as I tried to keep myself busy, the feeling in my chest was palpable, even if completely irrational. There is a component that comes from past relationships, I'm sure, but I just wasn't expecting it. Not at this stage, and certainly not this strongly. But I hung out with a poly friend during the week, which helped a great deal to get an opinion from experience. And the feeling dissipated. But then it came back again. The good thing, of course, is that being so self-aware, I recognize the feeling immediately and don't react to it. I understand now exactly where the impetus comes from all those alpha males who get so jealous and possessive and angry about their girlfriends. I just don't think you have to react that way, if you understand where the emotions come from. But my emotions were somehow exacerbated this week when Venus ran into Eri and I holding hands walking to the library. Now, she didn't say anything in person, but she texted me afterwards to say she'd seen us and felt altogether too weird to come and say hello. And I told her, oh, I wish you had, you know, that I explained that Eri knew all about her and it was really no big deal. But after a few more texts with Venus, I kind of realized that it had struck a nerve with her. And when I talked with Eri, while she said the same thing, that she wished Venus had said hello, she could understand why Venus might feel odd, and that she'd probably feel the same way if she saw me holding hands with someone else. It's the initial shock of actually seeing it, I think. I don't know. But Venus didn't freak out about it, and even said she was glad that it had happened. I'd noticed her pulling away, certainly physically anyway, the last couple of times we'd hung out, and my gut was that it had something to do with Eri. We actually had a nice chat on the phone midweek where she concurred that I hadn't imagined her pulling back, and she was trying to process her emotions. And it felt cathartic and endearing to talk so openly and kindly about our feelings. But I do feel that now, quite possibly, she's going to pull away further, certainly physically. And to be honest, look, that's perfectly fine. If it makes things easier and more positive in her life, I just like her a lot. Her soul, the person she is. And if our best relationship is as platonic friends, that's perfectly okay. They seem to stay in my life more often than non-platonic friends anyway. Perhaps. Because it seems I've lost some platonic friends recently too. That's why I started the podcast this week with that quote from the Byrds' 1965 cover of Pete Seeger's Turn, Turn, Turn. To me, that song is about acceptance. That, like my friend Zia always said, life is like being on a train. There are people in your compartment that you like and maybe chat and become friends with, and people that you don't. And then every now and then the train stops at a station and some people leave your compartment and get off the train. While you may miss the ones you liked, you just have to remember them fondly and hope that the people getting on will touch you in the same way. Okay, that sounded wrong. I think the point is that oftentimes in life, we try to cling on to this illusion of control. There's something that Venus mentioned to me this week when we talked, actually, in reference to the anxieties of recent parenthood. If you're like me and a determinist, you believe life is already written. Yet sometimes it feels so much like it's not that you can get overwhelmed with emotions about what ifs, about how your decisions or those of other people beyond your control will affect you. And it can get all washed around in your head, churning around and around. But then I think to that closing scene from American Beauty, my favourite movie, when Kevin Spacey says, "I guess I could be pretty pissed off about what happened to me. But it's hard to stay mad when there's so much beauty in the world. Sometimes I feel like I'm seeing it all at once, and it's too much. My heart fills up like a balloon that's about to burst. And then I remember to relax and stop trying to hold on to it. And then it flows through me like rain. And I can't feel anything but gratitude for every moment of my stupid little life." People will come and go from your life. And when you're aware of that, as I have been this week, it does make you worry about the people you feel like you can't stand to lose from your life, like the mother of your child, and certainly your children themselves. But it is the nature of life and love to be transient and sometimes painful, sometimes disappointing, but largely out of your control. Please God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The interview this week is the second part of my interview with Tony, my old friend from university, as we get further into the realities of being a parent and what it all means. But it makes an argument for non-monogamy, but not in the direction that most guys expect and or want.
Yeah.
The argument is, if women's sexual response is so delayed and men's is so short, why would that have ever evolved unless women were having sex with many guys one after the other?
Or... How to put this, to make the man perform multiple times?
Most men can't and or won't.
Well, that's why pharmacies made Viagra, isn't it?
Not back in the day when we evolved, so how does it make a possible argument?
No.
Find another argument. I mean, I'm all ears.
Man up, get on with it. That's your task.
But in the years of evolution, there was no such thing as man up, get on with it, that's your task, because okay, there was no desire, there was no procreational advantage for sexual pleasure with a woman.
But let's put it this way then. If the woman reached pleasure climax first,
yes,
and gave up thereafter,
yes,
and the man hadn't,
yes,
she would then not have been impregnated.
Why?
Because if she's given up,
oh,
had her
I
pleasure,
okay, so
rolled over and gone,
actually...
get the hell off me.
Right.
I'm done.
Yes.
I'm going to sleep.
Gotcha.
And the guy's going, well, hang on a minute, I've still got a massive one here that I need to do something with.
Right, and she's like, that's not massive.
Pretty much what every girlfriend's told me.
You're pleasing with that. Me. So, yeah. But what about then if they were just the same? If we had the same sort of sexual response, then that would make more sense for us to be monogamous, right?
I think that would be pretty much miraculous if male and female had
Why?
Exactly the same sexual response.
Why?
You've probably then found your ideal sexual partner, surely.
Well, conceivably, but what I'm saying is why, if we are monogamous by nature, why have our sexual responses not evolved to be monogamous? They've clearly not, because, as is the case...
They've evolved to make sure that procreation is positive in terms of furthering the human race, haven't they?
But why, if that's the case, what's the evolutionary advantage of a woman's sexual response being so much delayed in terms of procreation? Why? I'll tell you exactly why.
To ensure that that stallion makes it.
Which stallion?
The one
point.
In a million that
this
she finds.
This is the point. This is the exact
the
point.
The ones that weren't us, basically.
No, this is the exact point. This is why it proves it. Because we always used to think that natural selection between mates happened out here. You and I fought. All the guys fought. And whoever was the best fighter got all the girls. That was where the competition is. But that doesn't make sense with our sexual response. With our sexual response... The competition happens in the vagina. That's why. Why, if the women have a longer sexual response than a men do, that will mean they're having sex with more men. If it was exactly the same, women would have sex with one guy and leave it like that. Now, what does that mean? That means the first guy that she has sex with, a lot of the time, she's going to get pregnant with, which means from a genetic standpoint, not necessarily the best mate. Certainly back in the days where they didn't
he's
get
got
to go
have proved himself in a way that would then make her amorous and want to accept her.
No, not true at all. Not true at all, because that's only saying that in every situation there's going to be multiple men around. There may not be. There may be only like one guy around. The point of the matter is, what I'm saying is, if there are many guys sleeping with the same girl after a while, the strongest sperm of them all will get to the egg.
I read a report, it was a strange report, and I can't remember where I read it, but it said that someone who is having regular sex with somebody, a male having a regular sex encounter with a female, their sperm will turn on and attack another person's sperm, if encountered within that period of time. Basically what it was saying is that someone who is monogamous but then has a non-monogamous relationship,
mm-hmm.
there is a fight that goes on between the sperm of the newcomer and the monogamous man.
The newcomer quite exists. Let me ask you this. I'd like to have seen the study. How did they, you know what I mean? Let's put a camera up your vagina, madam, and then you have sex with this guy, then have sex with this guy, and then we'll film your sperms fighting. How on earth?
Yeah, I'm sure it's a report I've read. I'm pretty sure I've not just dreamt this, but...
I tell you what I did read in Sex at Dawn, which is a great book about the anthropological sexual history of human beings, is that the reason why a penis is bell-shaped at the end is to act as a suction to pull out the other guy's sperm before you put your sperm in the vagina.
Plausible.
Right? I just think, truthfully, that the reality of our sexual natures is a long way from popular perception. I think that's a fair point.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying that means that we should all be polyamorous. I'm saying that it means that perhaps there are other options, and perhaps this is something we should really explore as a species to figure out what makes us happiest and what allows us to live in the most positive, productive society we can.
I have a friend who is convinced that the reason that Northern Europeans are all blonde
mm-hmm.
is because blonde women were more attractive to the male species at the time.
Okay.
Whenever. And the reason for that is that they were better able to keep their man. And the survival of them and their child depended upon having a male partner who would defend them and also find the food and provide for their needs in what could be quite harsh northern winters.
But that makes no sense. Why would guys just naturally find blondes more attractive?
I made that argument, seeing as I married a Japanese woman who is short but with dark hair.
Right.
But his argument was that at that point in time, that was what...
That seems like a rather silly, nearsighted argument, because there's no selective advantage to someone living in the north with blonde hair, other than it might reflect the sun, and if there's stronger sun, that means they're less likely to get cancer.
Well, I always thought it was probably that they could hide better in the snow. Put your head down.
Only if you peed in it. silly argument. But
silly argument, but bears a moment's consideration before you throw it aside.
Yeah, okay. I mean, listen, I do think that we have a natural ability to pick out genetic strengths. I know there's been studies where children will smile more at people that society considers more attractive because they are more symmetrical. That we have a natural ability. When we see symmetry in somebody's body, that's an indication of good genetics, and that's why we're attracted to them.
I'm relatively symmetrical. Nobody likes me.
Well, you are quite short as well.
Yeah, I see.
And lots of people like you. What are you talking about?
I mean, women, basically.
Right. Everybody likes you, mate. So, let me ask you this then. You've met Eri now very briefly, and you've listened to a few episodes of the podcast.
Indeed.
And you obviously, you know, don't have any experience in the non-monogamous world, but we've discussed your viewpoints thereon. In terms of us having a kid, what do you think? What's your take? What's your advice?
If you both want a child, then I would suggest that's the most important part.
Okay, but is that the only part? And what are the other big things that we should be thinking about and considering, given your experience as a parent?
I would suggest that the best advice I could give you, and this isn't meant to sound like a marketing or some kind of ploy, is communication.
Right.
There will be times that you think you have made yourself 100% explicit, and actually all you've done is go, in the middle of the night when it's your turn to change the nappy or feed the baby.
Yeah.
There'll be times when you think that your viewpoint is 100% understood because you may have said it before.
Yeah.
When actually you are not clear about what you want to achieve.
Right.
We have, in our relationship, the further issue that we both try and use both languages, both English and Japanese.
Right.
And my Japanese is not as good as it used to be. And her English is much better than my Japanese, but still not always perfect.
Yeah.
And hence, what's said is not always what is heard.
Sometimes, there's a communication breakdown because of the language.
Yes.
Which with Eri is great because, you know, she speaks perfect English. And she's lived in America since she was 17, because I can't speak Japanese to save my life.
Yes. But I wouldn't suggest that even that is a saviour. I would say that quite often, especially when you're tired, strung out a little bit, not on drugs, but just from the lack of sleep, the whole stress of it all, that you think you have said something and you haven't. Maybe it's an internal monologue.
Gotcha.
And that is probably the greatest cause of friction that we have.
That makes sense. Well, the good thing about this is, you know, we've got a 4-page parenting partnership agreement that we've written out and we're going to sign. Why is that so funny?
Because it's going to mean bullshit when you're elbow deep in dirty nappies
and neither of you slept. I hope not, because that's the whole point of us doing this, is so that we can put down this is how we want to raise our kids. You know, this is what we want to do. And as part of that, we're going to have monthly meetings where we will sit down at that point and say, look, this is what we'd planned to do last month. This is how it's worked out. These are the agreements we've made. This is whether we've lived up to them or not. And these are suggestions for the next month. And also we have what's known as a mediator panel, which is 3 people who live close to us who, if we can't agree on something, we will go with them. And we will live by whatever they think we should do. Now, if that ever comes to be, we hope it won't. But at some point, there may be something we just can't see eye to eye. Therefore, I feel like we've got a couple of fail-safes in place. Or at least not fail-safes, good ideas to really encourage that communication.
I think you've got some great ideas. I would love to hear if they work. Because, and I don't suggest that it's going to be because communication fails and you are at each other's throat, I'm suggesting that time becomes so precious that all of those ideas will go out of the window, because the second you get to sit down and do one of those things, you'll both fall asleep.
Yeah?
Yes. My wife and I get about an hour a day to sit down and discuss everything we need to discuss.
Yeah.
That's an hour.
Right, that's an hour a day.
It is. Right. But that's an hour a day where we get to discuss everything, or to sit in peace and just sit down and do nothing.
We're not talking about an hour a day. We're talking about 3 hours a month. Like saying at the end of every month, or whenever it is, when it's coming up, okay, Sunday, 2 o'clock, let's go and get a coffee, let's sit at home, let's, you know.
Yep, agreed, and it's a great idea.
Right.
If you get it to work, please tell me, because I will follow that pattern. And
great.
Just today, I was meant to be in work at 8 o'clock. Uh-huh. I was in work at 11 today.
Oh, wow. How come?
Life.
Well, this is what Alan says. Alan says, forget about it. Doesn't matter what you want to do, it'll all go out the window. You know, if you've got to send an email at 11 o'clock and you get up early and you're getting ready to go so that you've got an hour spare, well, what happens if he shits himself? What happens if he doesn't want to get in the car? What happens if he bumps his head? What happens if all these things happen? I'm like, Al, okay, these things could happen at some point, but most of the time they're not. And really, if you do give it the extra hour, most of the time it will be okay. There will be some exceptions, I guarantee you. But I do believe that with proper time management, you can handle those extremities better.
I am fastidious about timekeeping.
Okay.
My work requires me to be. And I get very upset when timings are not met.
Right.
And we have never met a timing.
But this is the thing.
We have never met a timing. And I do not mean we've missed it by a couple of minutes.
Mm.
I'm happy if we're an hour late.
Right, okay. Now, before the baby, that was never the case.
No.
Well, that's an interesting point. But I do know people, I was just talking to my mum on the drive up here today, who always are late. And it's really simply because they're just not good at time management, where they go, okay, I'll be there in an hour. And given their experience, they should easily be able to say, no, it'll take me an hour and a half to get there. But they always say an hour, and so they're always late. And I think I can extrapolate that to babies and go, when you've got a baby, you go, okay, how long will it take me? And then you go, no. Remember last time when you did this, okay, great, I need an extra hour. Now, that may mean you need to get up an hour earlier, or...
Agreed. And I would suggest that is a great way to try and do things, but it's not always well received.
100%, yeah, I guarantee you, it will not be easy, but...
Every failure is the exception, but it seems to be the rule.
Huh, interesting. I mean, this is the funny thing. I talk to everybody and I say, well, you know, they all have a lot of reservations. Some people, a lot of reservations about the fact that we're not in a traditional relationship. Some people, just about how I'm not really prepared for the huge change in my life that's going to come.
You can't be. I was not prepared for it. I don't think you can ever prepare yourself for it other than just accepting that a month beforehand, you just, sorry, I'm not going to speak to anybody ever again, and that's going to be my life. You can't.
Yeah.
But what you can do is provide the support, and that's the most important thing, that ultimately, Eri as the mother is your parenting partner.
You can say a name. I don't say a name all the time.
Okay. Your parenting partner as the mother will probably feel greater responsibility at the start than you will.
Yeah?
Yep. And the most important thing you can do is provide the support.
Yeah.
And the traditional relationship, as we have discussed, is there, in my mind, to force the father to provide that extra support. Now, if you're willing to provide that extra support on your own back because that's what you want to do, well, then you don't need that relationship.
Correct.
But there will be many a father who has turned around and gone, screw this for a mm-hmm. game of soldiers. Actually, this is far too difficult and more than I thought I'd signed up for.
Right, absolutely.
Where the traditional relationship is what actually then keeps them in it.
And for better or for worse, because if they're really in a relationship they don't want to be in just because it's a traditional relationship, that's probably not a relationship they should be in.
Well, I'm thinking about the fact that actually the first bit is the most difficult, and it's transient in the fact that it is
and then 6 months to a year.
It gets easier, but people will not necessarily stick at it unless they're forced to, and the traditional relationship is a way of forcing them to do that because it's...
I don't buy it. I just think people are who they are. Some people honour their commitments and their obligations and some people don't. Why would I do it? Because it's my kid. That's the most important thing in the world to me.
Agreed.
Therefore, the well-being of the mother of my child is the most important thing in the world to me as well.
Yep.
And why would I do that? Because of my dad. Because I had the best dad in the world and that's why I want to be that person to somebody else.
Yeah. What I was trying to get at is that if you understand why you're doing what you're doing, mm-hmm. if you understand why you want a child, and if you understand the fact that you are going to have to support this person, the traditional relationship isn't required.
Yeah.
I think the traditional relationship was a shackle to ensure that the father continued in that required vein.
Huh.
And
doesn't seem to be working.
No, not necessarily. No.
Yeah. I think the more you try to shackle people into doing things, the less healthy it is.
Yes. They feel aggrieved at having to do it. But for the mother, that might be a better response than having to live on their own on the street in...
Or it could be a worse response. It could be a worse situation to be in with someone who doesn't really want to be a dad in the first place. I mean, it would be wonderful if women could just choose who to have sex with and who to have babies with. And could separate the two, which I guess they can because there's yep. the pill and there's contraception, so they can really choose that. It's just unfortunate oftentimes the people they're most attracted to are probably the ones they shouldn't have kids with as well, at least when they're yeah. younger. So, but that's a bigger...
That's a much wider, much wider discussion that we've had many a discussion on previously.
Over pepperoni pizza.
Yes, and many a beer. So communication would be one of the biggest things I would suggest.
Yeah.
And the other is... coming to terms with not being able to plan or achieve anything.
Come on. Look, I can give you a ton of examples of people who have planned and achieved a ton of stuff with kids. Stephen King, for example, he had kids before he ever became famous or published any books. And he just made sure that on a Sunday morning, or even I think it was once for an hour a morning, he had a little room near his laundry where he would sit with his typewriter and he would type. Now, it was his wife who said, "You're going to do this. I know you're good at this. I will stand behind you. This is your time. You write every day." Now, he could do that because he planned and he had his support of his wife as well. So it can be done.
It can be done.
Having kids is not a jail sentence, which means the rest of your life is going to be irrelevant and completely unproductive. Otherwise, Christ, we'd all fall apart.
I was suggesting more on the micro scale rather than the macro scale.
For example?
For example, the other day we were going to go for a walk.
Uh-huh.
And we had it all planned. We'd worked out where we were going the night before. We knew when we were going to leave. And we didn't leave the house.
Why?
Just things got in the way. Baby gets upset. Baby doesn't want to go in a car. Baby shits himself and everything goes horribly wrong. It gets to the point where sometimes it's easier to capitulate than it is to fight through.
Huh.
And you have to get to the point where you realise, and I'm not there, it frustrates me, that sometimes your plans are not in stone.
Yeah, right.
There are some things, catching a plane to Japan, you make it do.
Right.
And you get to the other side and your baggage for 2 days because you're utterly distraught and run out.
Yeah.
And you're just, right, that's it. I'm never getting on a plane with a 3-year-old ever again.
Yeah.
Or a 2-year-old. And when you do it again the next year and you absolutely do not learn. But I would suggest that on many occasions you'll make plans and those plans will fall through.
Huh.
And it's learning to accept that what you decide isn't necessarily what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm open to that to a certain extent for sure. I do think one of my goals and one of the positive things I think from a parenting partnership is the ability to sort of separate those two things to where I would say nothing I plan involving the baby I can guarantee. But stuff I plan that doesn't involve the baby, for example, Eri is taking care of the baby today.
Yep.
I'm going to do this. I can pretty much say that's safe in stone. Now, yes, the baby can get really sick and we have to go to hospital and that will happen very rarely. Very rarely. Baby shits himself. The baby doesn't want to go out. The baby screams and shouts. I'm still going out. Eri's going to take care of the baby. That could happen the exact opposite situation where I'm taking care of the baby. She's going out to see her friends or whatever it happens to be. And unless it's a life-threatening emergency, I will deal with the shit. I will deal with the crying. I will deal with all those things and let her go and do what she needs to do.
Yep. I'm not suggesting that's not impossible, but I'm suggesting that you need to be prepared for plans to be changed constantly.
Fair enough.
That is something that I have struggled with, and so has my wife.
Yeah.
We're both relatively controlling. No, I wouldn't suggest we're controlling, but we are relatively structured. We like to know what we're doing.
Mm.
We have a plan. We like to try and stick to that plan.
Yeah.
And actually, more often than not, we achieved the plan, but not in the way we expected to or the time frame we had.
Yeah, and I do think that's one of the sensibilities that the English do share with the Japanese, that sort of sense of efficientness and obligation and sticking to your word. And that's, again, a huge factor in what I'm looking for in a parenting partner, is someone who honours their obligations and what they said they're going to do. So I get it.
And then I go back to, how does that differ from a traditional relationship? You've put down on paper what you expect from each other.
Hmm.
It's even less explicit in the traditional marriage.
Yeah.
What you expect from each other.
Correct.
And yet people are unable to achieve that. So,
well, I think that's why. I think that's why they're unable to achieve it, because they don't set this down beforehand. Like most people who get married, who have kids, they don't sit down with a piece of paper and go, well, what happens if we fall out of love with each other? What happens if you fall in love with someone else? Where are the kids going to go to school? What's your views on religion? What's your views on vaccines? Where did this happen? Who are we allowed to babysit? They don't have these discussions, so that's why oftentimes they don't manage to resolve these things. They don't know what they are going to be going in. Whereas we've discussed everything. We've discussed everything that we possibly can think of in terms of that. That doesn't mean that it won't change, potentially.
Mm.
But again, as I said, hopefully we'll be able to talk once a month to do that.
That sounds like a great plan. That would be actually what I would consider a traditional relationship should be.
Yeah.
And hence I've said that, going back to my comment at the beginning of this discussion, that you're looking at the same coin from the other side. That actually, you've worked out what you think a traditional relationship should be.
Mm.
Sorry, you thought what a relationship should be. And actually, it's probably what a traditional relationship should be. But we've taken into Western society that a traditional relationship is just the prospect of getting married and having children, not all the bits that go with it.
Yeah, you know, that's a fair point. That is a fair point. And again, arguably, it comes back to my viewpoint that all relationships are somewhere on a sliding scale and they all have their own agreements and obligations and they should be discussed at the beginning. Very few people get into a monogamous relationship and describe what monogamy means to them. You know what I mean?
I'm assuming they work on the principle that they understand what the word in itself means.
Well, right, monogamy means that you don't sleep with someone else.
No.
Okay. But they never go, well, wait a second, you're friends with that girl at work. You hang out with that girl after work. Well, I'm not sleeping with her, so I'm still monogamous. But no, I get jealous. I don't want you to do that because you might start having feelings for him. Now, they've never discussed that before they got married. Perhaps she had that assumption. Well, of course, if you love someone, you don't want to be friends with anybody else because you're friends with me. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But he may not have had that assumption. That's my point. Is just saying, okay, you don't sleep with anybody else is not enough because there's more things involved than just whether I actually physically have sex with someone else.
Yeah. So communication again.
Communication again. And, you know, it's just not there in a number of human relationships. You know, arguably, you could make a very good argument. It's only really in the last 50 or so years there's even been any need for that, because before then, Christ, you know, we died when we were younger. We spent most of our life working hard, busting our ass to try to, like, put food on the table anyway. It's only now that so many of us have more of that freedom to really have these discussions, perhaps.
Yeah. If you listen to my my mum and my grandmother when she was alive,
yeah.
Well, everything was so much harder. You woke up at dawn.
Yeah.
You got up, you scraped the ice off the inside of the windows because it was so cold. You had no central heating. You slaved and then you went straight to sleep. There was no free time.
Yeah, right.
And now we are having...
The world's changing.
A world where we have free time.
The world has changed considerably in the last 50 years. And that being the case... It does seem a little strange that our notion of how to love and how to make babies and raise children has changed so little.
Does it need to?
I think it needs to.
Does the ideal need to change?
I think so. If society evolves in every other way, surely the way that we can love and relate and have children has to change with it. I mean, if you look at dating, for example, dating 100 years ago had to change now because of online dating, because of how easy it is to meet people now, and our expectations for relationships have changed so much as well. So if our ideas of dating doesn't change with it, then that's insane. If we try to date people the same way we did 100 years ago, today, it would never work.
No, but the ideal of dating hasn't changed. Was there even dating 100 years ago? I'm pretty sure there probably wasn't even such a concept.
I mean, there was, but 100 years ago, what, 1917? Yeah, there was, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the extended, protracted thing that people do for 20 years of their life. Now, because if you were 21 years old and a woman, and you weren't married with kids, you were a spinster.
Yeah.
Now that's changed.
But the ideal of dating was to go out, meet someone that you had a very like-minded view of the world with, someone that you thought was attractive, someone that you felt that you could get on with, and someone that you might want to have children with.
In very broad terms, not in the depth that people want it today, I think if you ask most people who got married 100 years ago, he was nice and kind and tall and he made some money. It was about as much as there was to it. And in the opposite direction, she had big hips and she came from a good family and I didn't think she'd cheat on me, would be pretty much it. And arguably, that's why a lot of those relationships weren't very fulfilling. And arguably, maybe the ones that did work were because they just figured it out as they went along.
It's possible, but I go back to, has what we wanted to achieve changed, or the method of achieving it?
Ultimately, we all want to be happy and fulfilled. That's never going to change.
No.
The question is, what makes us happy and fulfilled? And my argument is that that hasn't changed. Deep down, we're all hardwired a certain way to a certain extent. We are on the sliding scale, but we need to be able to be on that sliding scale. That's the key, is to understand that we're complex individuals as human beings. So one size fits all is not going to work. What makes human beings as a species happy and fulfilled? Being able to be different and somewhere on this sliding scale. Being able to be yourself and say, this is who I am, truly. This is what I want, truly. And this is how I'm going to get it. And if we can all say that and find our own spots on that scale, the world would be a pretty good place.
It would be.
Well, let's hope we get there one day. At least let's hope our kids get there.
The other thing I forgot to mention when you asked me any advice, that is the realization that I could not always resolve all of the issues.
What do you mean?
There were occasions when you just have to sit there and accept the situation.
Right.
There were times when my wife was down. There were times when she was angry. And there were times when she was depressed.
Yeah.
And there was nothing I could do about it.
Right.
She just is.
Yeah.
She just was.
Yeah.
And she just will be. Hormones are buzzing around.
Right.
They're bouncing off the walls. And you as a bloke, you sit there and you look at it and you go, right, this is a problem I need to solve.
Yeah.
And you don't have the manual. You don't have the tools.
Yeah.
You're still convinced that you need to solve it. You need to fix this problem. And you're convinced that you can. Well, actually, half the time, not doing anything is going to get you into trouble, but it'll get you into less trouble than trying to do something about it.
Women are the ocean. Women are nature. This is what I read in David Dada's Way of the Superior Man, where he talks about a lot of the conflict between men and women is the fact that men are very logical. And if you feel a certain way, you go, okay, I'm going to do this so I feel a different way. And if you say, okay, I'm going to go shopping tomorrow, then that's how you feel and you're going to go shopping together tomorrow. You have your word. A man's word is all he's got. Whereas women, they speak from emotion. They speak how they feel at that time. They may say, I want to move to America. And so you go, okay, and you start looking at houses and you put all this time in. And then the next week they go, you know what, I don't want to move to America anymore. And for us, that's insane. We put all this effort and you said you want to move to America and now you change your mind. But for them, they have to be true to who they feel at that person. And it's the same way with the ocean. You can go, okay, I'm going to go out on my boat today, but there's a storm coming in. And you can try and change your boat to work with this storm as much as possible. You can throw stuff in the ocean, so perhaps that will stop the storm or whatever it is. You can't do it. No. You just don't go in the ocean. Why? Because tomorrow the storm will pass. It'll calm down and it'll be okay. So I'm on board, mate. Some things you can't fix. Just watch the storm.
Yeah. But you will find that that creates another storm.
Human beings are complex individuals, aren't they? And I don't think we're ever going to not have some kind of conflict. That's just the way of things. But maybe that's not a terrible thing either.
No.
Anyway, mate, we are getting up for about an hour or so. So any closing thoughts? Because next time I see you, there's a good chance I could have a baby already.
I'm not changing nappies.
All right, well, I'll wait until you can shit in a pot before I come and see you.
Well, now you can come and see me whenever you like. You're just changing the nappies.
Copy that. Well, I'm not doing it, obviously. I'm a guy. Joking! I am joking!
Yeah, I wish it was like that. I get the shitty ones.
Do you?
Yeah. Okay. The ones full of piss, the easy ones, I don't get those.
Yeesh. All right. All good stuff. Well, thank you, mate.
Nice
lovely
talking.
Seeing you again. And listen, you know, I'm only a Skype call away when I've got advice needed. And so I'll give you guys a shout.
Thanks, mate. Good talking to you.
Or I won't. See you, mate. So that was Tony. But really, there was so much more that he talked about when the mics had been turned off, because he felt like they were the sort of things I wouldn't want discussed openly. God, how prescient some of those thoughts seem now. The first thing he told me was to be aware of how your feelings may evolve. That just because Eri feels this way now, don't assume she always will. And to be fair, Eri has already said that she accepts her emotions may change, but all she can do is be honest with me about how she feels now. Tony went on, though, that his emotions changed too when he became a parent. Before, he was always a laid-back, pacifistic person, but since becoming a parent, he recognises that there is a primal part of him now that would hurt someone in a moment badly to protect his wife and child. I can certainly understand that feeling this week. After meeting Eri, he also said that she seemed to like me a lot, and that a relationship based on love wasn't a bad thing, but that large life changes largely change your life. Now, he wasn't suggesting that any of this is a reason not to do it and move forward, just to be aware, and don't get into an untenable situation that you may have to step away from, which is good advice. When we were there, his son got sick and they were on the phone with the doctor and up all night. They looked tired, like they hadn't slept well in a long time. And I think that's just the way of things with a young child. Nonetheless, life moves on. Next week's interview is with Rafaela, a sweet girl I met at a wedding years ago who's popped into my life from time to time whenever I had a show near her. She opens up a lot in the interview, which was brave and courageous, and she talks candidly about the nature of some of her relationships.
I've had two different guys that I was with who don't know each other, but they both said to me at different points in my life, you know, I look at you in three different ways, as a friend, as a lover, and as a little sister. And I remember I was like, this is like weird. And two different guys said that to me.
I will see you next week. Well, that is it. Another week on this earth, another blessing. Thank you for listening and being part of my journey. Drop me a line if you have a comment or question, or if you think you know someone who'd be a good parenting partner for me. If you like the show, help spread the word, write a review, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. I will be back next week, but until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, be kind and happy. Let love rule. Hello.